Hello and welcome to the OTP, the one true podcast for fanfiction readers, writers, and lovers. I am, again, your host and mod, Enthusiasm Girl. So welcome back to part two of our Civil War special. This part is focused on Team Tony. And this episode was just as fun as our Steve conversation, and in it we get into all you ever needed to know about Tony Stark in fandom. So we touch on his relationship with Pepper Potts, with Rhodey and his bots, exactly how messed up he is by his PTSD and his trust issues. There's some talk of ships, so Tony, Steve, Frost Iron, Science Bros. And we also parallel our conversation in part one by talking about all those parental domestic Avengers dynamics from a different perspective with Di and our new contributor, Chris. So from the earliest days of Iron Man fandom right through to a little bit of pre-Civil War conversation, it was extremely entertaining for us to talk about, and I hope it's just as entertaining for you to listen to. If you were not a Tony fan prior to now, I hope by the end of the episode, you are at least reconsidering that position. As usual, please, if you have children around, maybe reconsider listening. It's a little bit of swearing, because we are talking about Tony Stark, so it gets, I think, a little bit racier than it sometimes does. But yeah, enjoy the episode, everybody. I have Chris and Di with me today, and we are going to talk about Tony Stark. I don't know if I would say that we are all on Team Tony instead of Team Steve, but, you know, I don't want to have us pick a side. I know I love Steve as much as Tony, but...
Team, why can't we all just get along?
Right.
Mine is Team OT3.
Yep. Yep, I think I said it to you before, Di, make love, not war.
Yeah. Woo!
That's
why have ship wars when you could just OT3?
Exactly. Nope, that's totally the truth. So, what we are going to do is we are going to talk about how he evolved as a character. If you're listening to this and you are thinking, oh, I don't like Tony, I'm going to turn it off. Well, I would encourage you to listen because we are going to give you a quick rundown, if you haven't seen the Iron Man movies, of a little bit of the things that happened to Tony, why fans love him so much, what they write about when they write about him. Some of the characters who maybe you've seen in Avengers movies and said to yourself, hey, who's that guy? And they're actually characters from Iron Man. Because both him and Steve have their own little gangs of characters. So, we're going to start by talking about who Tony is as a character in his arc up to this point. And obviously, that goes right back to the very foundations of the MCU, to Iron Man. Chris, do you want to give us a little bit of a rundown of the plot of Iron Man?
So, Iron Man, we meet him. He's an arrogant billionaire playboy philanthropist who has just inherited his father's weapons business and has no thought to question anything, just continues on, is pleased to make money, winds up captured by terrorists and has to genius his way out of the situation, creates the first Iron Man suit, and has to face the fact that the company that he's turned a blind eye to and kind of trusted and kind of been comfortable with is actually doesn't have enough oversight and is causing a lot of problems, and a lot of people are getting hurt thanks to his negligence. So it's him figuring out what he can do, figuring out what he needs to do, taking responsibility for what his company's been doing, and becoming a superhero along the way.
That is an amazing description of Iron Man. Perfect. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Di, that Chris left out?
I think she summed it up really well, actually.
Yeah, that's a great summation. I would say that I think some people who maybe haven't seen Iron Man maybe misunderstand the fact that him being in Afghanistan and his struggle to escape Afghanistan, mm-hmm. that could easily be a whole movie in and of itself.
Oh, totally.
That's the first, like, 20 minutes mm-hmm. of Iron Man. I mean, it's a tight, like, really well-plotted movie that kind of goes in directions you're not expecting it to go. And in particular, it's about Stark Industries as a company and his relationship with a kind of a father figure named Obadiah Stane, who's the villain. And it's about the relationships in his life, and it shows you that process of him developing this suit of armor. So you see that in Iron Man 1, And then in the MCU timeline, you have Incredible Hulk, which really kind of is or isn't an MCU movie, depending on what you think of it.
Yeah.
And then the next one is actually Iron Man 2. So his sequels were back-to-back. Di, do you want to explain a little bit about what happens with Tony in Iron Man 2?
Okay, I'll do it a little bit. I haven't seen this one in a while. I've mostly just binge-watched the first one over and over again, because it's kind of my favorite. But I do know that this is after he's revealed himself as Iron Man. And we get to meet Ivan Vanko, and he's vengeful against Tony because some past with him and his father, Anton, and his father just died, and he starts working on making his own arc reactor. And then there's him confronting him with his, like, lightning whips, it looked like, at the race.
Yeah, Ivan Vanko is the supervillain named Whiplash.
Yes.
And when you said arc reactor, just for anyone who's not, like, a Stark diehard fan, most people do know, though, the arc reactor he gets in Afghanistan, and it helps his heart, because he has a heart problem, he has shrapnel, right?
Yes, traveling slowly.
Iron Man 2 is not just about Ivan Vanko, though.
No, it's also Justin Hammer.
Yes, who's my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Nothing ever works for him. It's kind of funny. He's like his rival, essentially, and he wants to show that he can also make an Iron Man. There was also that part with Senate hearing where they're trying to prove that, like, it's a weapon, not protection or anything, that anyone could just make one. And he tries and he fails in the video. But that's what his main goal is, to prove that he wants to upstage Tony Stark. Mm-hmm. Essentially.
I would say that the way that the villains kind of intersect is that you see him at the beginning in a Senate hearing, which for MCU fans who are listening is actually led by the late Gary Shandling, who just passed away, who you see again in Captain America Winter Soldier and other MCU movies. But he's leading a Senate hearing, and essentially because Tony said he's Iron Man, the government wants the Iron Man suit to belong to them. And they're arguing with him that it can't just belong to him. It's a Pandora's box that he's opened, and other people are going to be able to now replicate that technology. And what he is essentially saying to the government is, no, they can't. And so then his struggle is that he has these two villains who are both on a race to make that technology and do. To be able to kind of show him up. Now, I think for fandom, the other thing about Iron Man 2 that's really key is that it is a big, long Tony Wump movie.
Absolutely.
Yes, because I think fandom could care less about Justin Hammer or Ivan Vanko. Any Iron Man 2 fic you read is focusing on the idea that his arc reactor that powers his heart is actually slowly poisoning him. So he's spending the whole movie in a downward spiral where he thinks he is dying. And where he thinks he has to basically settle out all of his relationships, and he hasn't told anybody. And it's about his descent into kind of alcoholism and hedonism and one big blowout before he goes, kind of an attitude. So for fans, I think, when you look at some of the tropes we're going to talk about later related to Iron Man, that's the thing that they remember about Iron Man 2.
Absolutely.
That's the thing, is I think what people have to understand about Tony as a character through the arc of those two movies is he is somebody who on the outside is extraordinarily confident, extraordinarily self-assured. Everybody wants to be him. He self-describes in Avengers as genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist, right? Like, that's the motto of Tony fans. But internally, he has a lot of struggles. And it's not done in a poor little rich boy way. It's done in the way of he has a lot of self-loathing. He has a lot of guilt. He has a lot of PTSD because he was tortured.
Definitely.
He has a lot of health problems. So that's that dichotomy I think the fans like. And there was a quote on Fanlore, and it actually came from a shipper's manifesto, which isn't something people do as much anymore. But it comes from this statement explaining Tony and Steve. And I couldn't source the quote because I tried to follow it down a rabbit hole, but it's because it's fan lore, sometimes sites go down and the sources aren't there. But the quote is, "The most important thing to know about Tony Stark is that he hates himself a lot for various reasons, beginning with survivor's guilt and ending with alcoholism and years of chronic depression. The second most important thing to know about Tony Stark is that he has a suit of high-tech armor that he loves a whole lot and a bad heart. unlikely though it may seem, these two facts are closely connected.
Mm-hmm.
That couple of statements there kind of sums up fandom's entire approach to Tony. Not that there's not a lot more to him, but those are the things that fandom kind of focuses on.
Right? Absolutely.
Definitely.
So a lot of these fics that you read, especially in that period pre-Avengers, you're looking at alcoholism and substance abuse, self-loathing, his relationship to his company, his relationship to his assistant, Pepper Potts, that becomes romantic over the course of those first two movies. There's a lot of daddy issues and kind of characterization of him as an orphan because both of his parents died when he was in his 20s.
And both of his parents died, and then his uncle, who was his surrogate father figure, sells him out and tries to kill him.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
well, he's not actually his uncle, but he very much plays that part, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in the first Iron Man, yes, that is the villain who tries to kill him, this person who was otherwise looking out for him.
Mm-hmm. So if he didn't have daddy issues before.
Right.
Because if he didn't, right. Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the PTSD aspect of it and his health, right? So that's kind of Tony pre-Avengers. And I think that the funny thing about that is when I looked at the tags, there are 1,714 fics for him that are tagged for PTSD. Like, it does actually crack the top 10 tags for him because people were writing about it that much. Mm-hmm. And the three top canonical related tags that are not relationship tags that start with Tony Stark on AO3 are Tony Stark has a heart, Tony Stark needs a hug, and Tony Stark has issues.
Poor guy. The other really good one is Howard's A-plus parenting.
Yes. So Howard Stark's A-plus parenting is another good one. We'll talk a little bit about that, right? Because, like I said, most of what was being written pre-Avengers about Tony was definitely Wump. And there is a lot of backstory fanon. We don't see a lot of his dad in the first couple of movies, but they give you hints just through some kind of voiceovers and some different ways that his relationship with his dad was really cold.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I've said on the show before I get really frustrated because a lot of fans kind of took that and they were like, oh, well, he was an alcoholic who beat him. I don't know where they get that from. That's a particular fanon of Howard Stark and Tony's childhood that I don't enjoy, but it's the majority of what's in that Howard Stark's A-plus parenting tag.
I think that's an easy place to go in a lot of narratives. And prior to Avengers, we didn't particularly know about Howard Stark's obsession with Cap and all the rest of that.
Yeah.
So we had to go somewhere, and that's kind of an easy place. That's a place that explains it for a lot of other people who experience things that Tony experiences. So.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I mean, the Wump for Tony is pretty brutal. There's a lot of Obadiah Stane child molestation stories. Because of the fact, as we said, that he is kind of this surrogate uncle figure.
Yeah.
There are a lot of stories that try to explain this long, tragic backstory of why he is as messed up as he is.
Uh-huh. Right?
So Howard Stark's A-plus parenting is actually a fairly well-used tag on AO3. You also have a lot of Wump and Hurt Comfort related, again, to the PTSD, related to him being sick. All of those types of things kind of come into that. So people love to torture Tony Stark more than he was already tortured, basically.
Pretty much, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a shocking amount of Femme Tony that was even being written pre-Avengers.
Yeah, I've seen a few.
Yeah, enough that people know there's a fanon around his name as a woman. So you'll always either see him as Antonia Stark or Natasha Stark, which comes from a comic book arc.
Mm.
But mostly you see him as Antonia. There's quite a fair bit. I think it comes from him being so macho. Like, he's not macho in the way that Steve Rogers is macho, but that sense of admitting to dating Maxim models and strutting into the room. Like,
the playboyness of him.
Yeah, yes. And trying too hard, too, is the other part.
Yeah.
It's all an act, and it's all a surface thing, and how much of it is actually him, and how much of it is compensating.
Yeah, and how much is the media, too.
Right, and that's what I think is interesting about the next thing that was really done a lot more pre-Avengers, which is the Tony and Pepper Potts relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the few real relationships that you see him have, where he seems to let his guard down and be somewhat himself. And there's a lot of fic that explores that dichotomy between who he presents to the world and then who he really is.
Yeah.
So I think with the gender swap aspect of it, for a lot of women who see him and they want to explore these ideas of gender and feminism, like, the stuff that's gender swap with him tends to be a little different than other gender swap stuff I've seen, because it really is about, hey, if you took him and you made him a girl, it's going to be vastly different because of the number of women CEOs and the way you see his future CEO, Pepper Potts, treated, and women in the business world, and women who are engineers, right, which is what he is. So the gender swap aspect of it's really interesting to me that there's so much of it. What do you guys think about Tony and Pepper in fic?
I love them. I can totally get behind other ships. I'm a total multi-shipper, but Pepper Tony is probably my favorite ship for Tony. I think that, I mean, there are interesting things that happen to their relationship in Iron Man 2, and in Avengers, and especially in Iron Man 3, that make it a much healthier relationship, because it was really not okay for a long time. He had a lot of his own stuff that he had to work through before he was in any kind of a position to handle her well. But now that they are, you know, she's absolutely his rock, and it's beautiful, and it's great. And I've read so many, like, ones where it's like ABO and she's his alpha, or BDSM AUs and she's his dom, especially after Iron Man 3. I love them. I think that they're great together, and I think she's very healthy for him.
Yeah, so. She's super healthy for him. I think anybody who wants to write... The problem with Pepper is anybody who wants to write really heavy wump, they kind of have to just get Pepper out of the way. Like, she becomes part of the wump. Her dumping him becomes part of the wump, which then makes her into a bitch, because it's usually that she's dumping him at the time he needs her most.
Yeah.
Which is not how you see her behave in canon, right?
No. Well, like, kind of, but she doesn't know. She doesn't know what he's going through, because he's done his very best to keep her from having any idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
So.
That's the thing, is I think when he falls apart and she can see he's falling apart, she's usually in canon there, right?
Absolutely.
That's one thing I do dislike sometimes, is how when you're trying to get your one favorite character to be with you, another favorite character in a fan fiction, that sometimes the canon pairing, the other person, they get shat on. For example, Pepper always gets, like, she seems like such a horrible person in some fan fiction because they just want... you know, Tony to be with X character, but Pepper's in the way, so how can we get Pepper out of the way so they can be together?
Yeah, and
it's like, it just makes me so sad for Pepper.
I think, too, even fans who like Pepper, because the thing is, to do that to Pepper, to make her into this horrible person all of a sudden, I actually think a lot of fans do actually feel bad about that, because it's like some other female characters like Mary on Sherlock, where if you want to, you can find 10 reasons why they're a crummy female character anyway, right? I think with Pepper, it hurts people to do that, because she's a great female character. She's the CEO of his company after the second Iron Man movie. She is shown to be very independent and assertive. They started out as best friends, and she's been in his life for such a long time, according to the movies, that she's not an easy character to write out. And I do think that even the people who try to put him with Steve, or try to make him in a slash pairing, what I'll see is, instead of making her into a horrible person and having her walk out, what they will do is that she will fall in to the role of a really awful, stereotypical best gal friend to the gay guy. And I almost hate that more, right? So it's one thing if you're going to say, okay, she's had it up to here with his bullshit and she walks, right? It's entirely another thing to have him say, ooh, you know, I know we've been together a long time, but I really, really love Steve. And to have her be like, really? Oh my God, that's awesome. Let's go buy you a new outfit that Steve will like. And I don't know, like, that almost bugs me more.
Well, but that one's common to, like, fandom at large, and this problem with having bisexual characters. So...
yes, and as Tony is an interesting one to do slash with, because he lends himself to saying that he's bisexual more than a lot of other characters, right? So when we talk about Steve Rogers, I think with him, he is a hard character to suddenly make homosexual or bisexual. Mm-hmm. Just based on stuff in his life, based on his behaviors, just based on things in canon. Mm-hmm. Versus with Tony, yes, you see him talk repeatedly and make jokes about threesomes with Maxim models, and within the first 5 minutes of the first movie, he's taking a reporter he meets to bed, and he's clearly a horn dog and a playboy. Yep. But again, he doesn't seem like he doesn't seem uncomfortable in his masculinity for somebody who drives such fancy cars and kind of is in every other way putting on this show. It's a show of masculinity, but it's not, in a way. He seems very comfortable with everybody in the world knowing about his sex life. So a lot of fix, what I think is kind of nice, is that the question of Tony's sex life is, it's automatically just assumed he's bisexual. And it's usually a case of another character saying, wait, I didn't know you were bisexual. And him being like, really? Go to YouTube and take 5 minutes to look up my sexual history on YouTube and the videos that have come out in the press. And to me, that's pretty accurate and pretty easy for fans to kind of do, right? I think if they're making him actually a homosexual instead of bisexual, that's mischaracterization, because you see him have a lot of heterosexual sex.
They have to do a lot more work to make his characterization believable like that.
But I do 100% think that, I mean, we'll talk later about the fact that post-Avengers, he's kind of the fandom bicycle. And I think that's because in the movies, he's shown to be kind of, like, out there.
He's more comfortable with his own sexuality and more, like, comfortable with being with whomever.
Flirts with anyone on two legs.
The swagger he has is not like a no-homo kind of a swagger, basically.
He's like the Jack Harkness of the Avengers.
Absolutely.
I see it.
So one thing you brought up about even going back to pre-Avengers fic about Tony, Chris, is interesting to me because you said that you read a lot of fics with Pepper where she's his dom or she's his alpha, which in the world of female characters, specifically in het pairings, is extremely rare. And it consistently, I've never seen a fic where Pepper is his Omega or Pepper is his sub, really. And if you look at the stuff being written in other ships for him as well, he's almost always the bottom. He's almost always the Omega, always the sub.
I find if I read one of those fanfics, I can't picture him as the alpha or the, like, or the Don, because it's just, because Tony is just, like, I don't know, I always picture him as sub or the bottom, because, like, he has a lot of things he's got to work through, and he has a lot of, like, personal issues, so he needs to be taken care of, essentially, I think, is the way that people may perceive it to be.
Absolutely.
So you think it goes into that usage of the Tony Stark needs a hug tag?
Yeah.
It also comes into Tony Stark needs a Dom, or Tony Stark needs an alpha.
Well, in fanfiction, a lot of the things that people focus on is he's in his workshop all the time. He doesn't eat. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't know how to take care of himself. Just his armor and his bots.
No, his bots take care of him. I don't think he knows how to take care of his bots. They take care of him.
It's true. But his workshop in general is, like, his only, like, area that he kind of, like, goes to. And he, and when you read these, like, the fanfictions, his alpha or his dom is the one that's, you know, trying to get him out of there, getting him eating, getting him sleep. He needs that person there.
That's what you see Pepper do, too.
Absolutely.
Like, it's very telling that she starts out as his assistant, managing his life for him. And even when she's CEO of the company, she's to a degree still doing that, right? Like, this is a guy who invented robots to tell him what time it was and when to sleep and when to eat and remind him of regular... Because his mind just goes very, very quickly with the genius that he has, right? And multiple times in the movies, you see him, like, downing Red Bulls and not sleeping and obsessing, like, obsessive-compulsive behavior about a thing he has to do and being really reckless in his decision-making. So my favorite scene in the entire Marvel franchise probably is the montage where he builds that first Iron Man suit in Iron Man 1 because he's self-testing it, which is a thing that's insane to be self-testing a piece of tech. He wears it. His robot that runs all of his specs, Jarvis, is telling him, you know, sir, I don't think this is a good idea. Doesn't care. And it's just a montage of him injuring himself in various hilarious ways.
Poor guy.
Yep. It's entertaining to me, though. I love that kind of fans took away that aspect of his personality, too. So you have this guy who is putting on airs and a pretense versus who he really is all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's been through these horrific things that are just made for Wump.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, he's very reckless and makes crazy decisions.
Uh-huh.
So, like, no wonder fandom loves him and has found ways to write interesting, entertaining stories about him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about how he evolved in fandom and how his characterization changed, which I think it did in some huge ways, after the mm-hmm. Avengers came out, moving into phase two of the MCU. Do you think that after the Avengers, there were different characterizations and different ships and different aspects of Tony that fandom was latching onto versus the kinds of fic that had been written before then?
I definitely, there's a very big difference of types of dynamics you see, I find, in certain fan fictions, because with there being so many new characters now introduced, there's so much room to play with in terms of relationship dynamics, whether it be romantic or just friendship. I find there's a lot of family Avengers fan fictions where they all mm-hmm. kind of move into the tower and they're all big happy family, which makes me happy and warm inside.
Domestic Avengers.
Domestic, yes. Yes.
Yeah. It can be, I love the domesticity.
He builds his tower, everybody's got a floor.
Yeah. It's, yep. And all the fan fictions have it, and I still love it. Like, it doesn't get uh-huh. old for me.
Well, my thing is, it's not just that kind of fanon. It's, so, the fanon version of Stark Tower, everybody has a floor, they all move in. Usually the hardest one to convince to move in is Steve.
Mm.
And at the end of Avengers, of course, Bruce is already there, and Bruce has a whole floor where he can Hulk out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. they have movie nights. That's my yeah. favorite part of any super family or domestic nights. Avengers fic is the movie nights.
Because they have to show Steve everything he missed.
Exactly. Yes.
That's
and
usually
then Bucky
the
when he eventually joins as well.
Mm-hmm.
But my whole thing about the super family fic, and I want to ask you this question, because I think some fans answer it differently and it always amuses me. So Tony and Steve are always the mommy and daddy of the super family. is Tony the mommy or the daddy, and why? So, Chris, what do you think about that? I apologize now to anyone listening who says, oh, that's very gender normative. I don't mean it in the sense of, like, feminine traits or masculine traits, right?
I know what you mean. If you mean, like, in the sense of who's the caretaker and who's the, I mean, they both have very different roles. And Tony, for instance, or at least Tony through Jarvis, is able to take care of everybody's need and make sure all of their schedules are lined up exactly how they should. You know, he's able to do that, I guess, kind of motherly role for the whole tower. So
usually it's Tony has built them a gym and mm-hmm. Tony yep. has made sure that their floors are themed to the things that they like.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, that when they move in, it's Tony is that, like, nurturing provider, mm-hmm. even yeah. though he's a mess emotionally. Like,
yes.
he's not emotionally ever. And again, when I say mommy and daddy, I realize I'm going to get some pushback. I mean in the sense of, okay,
yeah,
someone
yeah.
being more nurturing and then somebody being more the disciplinarian and the stern mm-hmm. kind of figure. And I feel like it's weird.
Shield.
Because
Shield is the disciplinarian.
Yes. But I always feel like with Tony, fans
Tony's
go out of their
parent.
Way. Well, fans go out of their way, I think, though. The reason I'm talking about those dynamics isn't because I believe necessarily
yeah, yeah.
that those dynamics exist. But I think that mm-hmm. fans go out of their way to
yeah.
put that into the dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, they go out of their way to make Tony the mommy, to make Tony the one who's going to bring them all together,
yeah.
the one who's going to give them everything they need
yeah.
and take care of them,
mm-hmm.
The one who's going to make sure all of them are where they need to be.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
Versus, like, I don't really as often see Steve filling that role.
Mm.
Steve is the one who they all look up to as a role model.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve is the one organizing, like, the
battles and things?
Yeah, like the team training and the team mm-hmm. battles that are regimented and being in the more military leadership kind of a distanced
uh-huh.
role, right? But, like, Tony is the one who's like, hey, everybody, movie night time. And, like,
mm-hmm.
Tony is the one who's taking them all shopping and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Tony's totally, like, the fun parent, you know, the one that wants to be your best friend and, like, do all the cool things with you. But when it really gets down to it, he can be just as nurturing and, you know, just as caring for the rest of them, but still
mm-hmm.
also be really fun.
mm-hmm.
I get a little annoyed, I think, when fans overdo, though, this idea that deep down underneath all of that brisk self-loathing and jokes that Tony just wants to give everybody a hug and nurture everybody and, like, share his money with the whole wide world. No. Like, I do get a little annoyed by that, though, because I think Iron Man 3 – that might be part of why I think some fans had a problem with Iron Man 3, because he's not that way in that movie most of all. Mm-hmm. Because, like, he's paired with a kid in that movie, mm-hmm. and he treats that kid like garbage. Uh-huh. But, I mean, he does give the kid a whole lab of stuff at the end, but I think some people, when they write that version of Tony, you can tell that they're kind of mistaking giving a person mm-hmm. everything your money can buy for the same thing as being emotionally nurturing. Building them a tower and giving them all a floor and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. I think some fans read that as, oh, he's so wonderful and nice and nurturing to them. But throwing money at people is not the same thing.
Yeah. He's nurturing to them. They yeah. are the ones that are his fan. You know, he could care less about a lot of other people. To some extent, you know, he wants to be a decent human being, but it's the people who are his, the people who are his team, who are his family. Those are the ones who he would literally give them his shirt.
I think that fans, what they haven't picked up on is that it's a part of that self-loathing where Tony throws money at people to show love because Tony knows that he treats them like crap emotionally normally.
Mm-hmm. Do you, or like, he will eventually.
Yeah. With Pepper, when you see him throwing money at her, it's always because he knows he's being an asshole. Like, mm-hmm. it's never like he's throwing money at her because he genuinely loves her and he wants her to have the thing. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, I showed up 50 minutes late to our own wedding. Here, have a house in Maui. It's a different kind of a knee-jerk reaction than I think some fans are interpreting it, is what I'm saying.
So I think that's also a pre and post Avengers thing. I think that people who came into and got to know Tony through Avengers and Iron Man 3 saw the side of Tony that didn't do that as much. It wasn't like most of Iron Man 2, most of his interactions with her were screwing up and fixing it with large presents and screwing up again and fixing it with large presents.
Screwing up the presents sometimes.
Yeah. Huh? Whereas, you know, that's not really necessarily what Tony was about in Avengers, because it wasn't Tony's movie. He had far fewer opportunities to screw up on an interpersonal level.
Even in Iron Man 3, though, it's funny because his whole way of celebrating Christmas with Pepper is just to buy her a giant bunny that won't fit in the house.
Yeah. She thought that was funny, though, didn't she?
She kind of thought that was funny, but I think that she also knows that that stuff is, it's like well-intentioned thoughtlessness.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's
like, I can't be bothered to care, so I'm going to do something that seems like I care with money because I have it.
Yeah.
Because I can.
Yeah.
Tony Stark.
I just think that's a kind of an interesting aspect of his character that I'd like. I don't think fans are aware that that's what they're doing with his character when they write it that way.
And I think the other thing maybe that they're doing with that, too, is that it's a lot easier for him to show that he cares through money than by opening up about all of the crappy things that he hates about himself that he kind of hopes nobody knows about. So, yeah, I'm going to throw money at you because I want you to be my friend and I know I'm going to screw up, but also because I don't want to share with you in the way that, you know, I don't want to be honest about who I am, because if I am, then seriously, you won't want to hang out with me anymore.
I do think there's a lot of domestic Avengers fic where the moral of the story is that Tony tries to throw money at them, but then in the end he realizes that they like him for him and not his money. Like, I've seen those, and I think it's funny too, because if you actually look at canon, he does not have a single friend who he is not paying to be there.
Yeah.
At least until Pepper becomes the CEO, and even then she's the CEO.
Yeah.
He gives her that job, you can tell, to kind of keep her around. So like, if you look at all of his closest relationships, right, all of them, Pepper Potts hired as his assistant. She was earning a salary from him. She was only there for a long time because he was paying her.
Yeah.
Happy Hogan is his security guard. He's being paid to hang around Tony all the time. Mm-hmm. Rhodey. Rhodey works as his military liaison. Mm-hmm. He has to be around Tony for work. And a lot of the times that relationship is built on Rhodey needing something from Tony.
Yeah.
And Rhodey being the guy the military sends to get something from Tony.
Uh-huh.
You look at that going back to Stain. Obadiah Stain was obviously this person who was completely and totally phony with him. But he was okay with that because he could pay him to stay around. And Stain wanted something from him.
Mm-hmm.
And you have these robots that he's built who he built them. Like, they can't not be friends with them. He built them.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that the majority of relationships that you see him have, growing up as wealthy and growing up as famous as he did, mm-hmm. like, that has to be very, very hard for you to make friends when you know that literally the whole world wants something from you.
Yeah.
Because you're that famous and rich. Mm-hmm. Like, you're never going to meet somebody and have them immediately be like, I want to get to know him. The yeah. first thing they're going to think is, what can I get from him?
Yeah,
and I think it's telling that, like, even in the friendships he's built, that's still part of the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That they're getting totally. Something from being friends with him.
Totally.
So we talked about domestic Avengers fic. There was a lot of it. Part of the domestic Avengers fic, again, having kind of a mommy-daddy dynamic is where I think a lot of the Tony-Steve pairing came from, yep, because that definitely. Exploded post-Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
That was the dominant ship in the MCU for quite a while after mm-hmm. the Avengers.
Yeah.
Chris, what do you think the appeal to people is of Tony and Steve?
Well, they have a beautiful relationship in Avengers. There's so much chemistry and so much intensity between them, and they come from such opposite points of view. That conversation that they have, the, you know, Captain America, buck up soldier, and Tony, we are not soldiers. That conversation is so intense. Their relationship is, there's so much there to work through. And then when you add in the dynamics of, Steve knew Tony's dad, and then Tony's dad spent the rest of his life obsessed with finding Steve. You know, all of this extra stuff. It's just such a beautifully complex, kind of toxic in places relationship, and there's so much potential to go so many directions with it.
I think for any Steve Rogers fan or MCU fan who mm-hmm. has not, again, really seen the Iron Man movies, or for any of them who haven't seen the Captain America movies where they only watch Iron Man, like, that history between Howard Stark, like between Tony's dad and Captain America and Steve, is seeded across a variety of different aspects of the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there might be people who really love Tony but who didn't see the characterization of Howard in yeah. First Avenger,
yeah.
or vice versa, who, like, have only seen the Iron Man movies and their version mm-hmm. of Howard Stark comes only from that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating to me that I think sometimes people forget about that aspect of the Tony-Steve dynamic, right?
Yeah.
That Howard was best friends with Steve and helped develop the serum. So there's mm-hmm. this family history where Tony would have grown up with the legends of Captain America,
definitely.
Not just as a legend like everybody else, but like as a personal thing for his dad.
On the mm-hmm. pedestal.
Yeah. Yep. So I don't know. I think Tony and Steve are interesting because Steve also seems like one of those characters, because of his integrity and his honesty, who isn't going to let Tony throw his money around and solve a problem.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right? Like, and who doesn't buy Tony's bullshit to the same degree as everybody else, who kind of cuts through it and sees Stark, I think, from the moment he meets him as a villain. Like, I think
yeah.
the whole Avengers movie, their arc, is about Tony trying to prove himself to Steve to a degree.
Uh-huh. Well, Steve has just come from a war, and he's come from a war where he's extremely righteous. He's absolutely on the side of right.
Yeah.
He has worked very tightly with the military. His government was 100% in the right on the side of that war. That's what Steve has come out of.
Yes.
And Tony is post-Vietnam and post all of that crap. And Tony believes that the government is totally fallible. And we've many, many times been involved in wars that we should not have been fighting in. That, you know, and so Tony has no trust. He has very little trust in the government at that point. But Steve is a soldier and was a soldier. And so Steve thinks, number one, you need to be there to support your country. Your role is to support other people. And Tony, that has never been his experience ever. And this is coming from a guy that his dad idolized and obsessed over forever. So
the whole, like, opposites attract kind of thing really, I think, work in with the two of them, because their ideals seem very different.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting, too, that now we're going to have Civil War coming up. And I think the most interesting thing about that, though, is that the MCU, going all the way back to Iron Man 1 and 2,
mm-hmm.
has been very slowly having Tony on the one side, as you said, being post-Vietnam, anti-authoritarian.
Mm-hmm.
In Iron Man 2, he literally, at one point, the movie uses one of its only swear words to have him tell a senator to fuck himself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. he is literally giving the middle finger to that the government that whole movie.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
He says, I have privatized world peace. You're welcome, to the government.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Does not trust S.H.I.E.L.D. Does not Mm-mm. want Fury around. Does not think any of it is worth it. Thinks he can do everything alone.
Uh-huh.
versus Steve's arc starts out as he's supported by the Howling Commandos. He believes in the structure of the war. He believes in other people backing him up. He believes in the government and that they're doing the right thing. And I think what's interesting is Tony's whole arc all the way up to now has been about him realizing that he can't do it alone, that the government is necessary, because when he tries to intervene alone, he fucks it up. So government oversight and accountability is necessary. And because he's famous and he's having the public blame him as like the public face for these things, I think he slowly has come around to this idea that the only way to solve the world's problems is together. And we have to trust the government. We have to have a shield as an organization. We have to have these structures, and I can support them. Versus, I think what you've seen happen with Steve throughout Winter Soldier is he's taken the opposite path. He has really come around to SHIELD is up to no good. These sorts of government institutions are only ever going to screw it up. I need to look out for myself and my people, you know, and make sure we come through this okay, being very focused on Bucky, being very focused instead of on the whole and the greater good, on kind of the individual people who he's lost being in the position he's in. So I think that that's super fascinating to me that they've managed to take these two characters full circle from where you see them in the beginning to now they're going to have this kind of fight over the positions that they themselves held at the beginning of their arcs.
Absolutely.
Right. It's very interesting how they're like twisting it around.
So I'm going to move on from Tony and Steve, though, because there's a couple of other really interesting pairings that came out for Tony that are totally post-Avengers. And you don't actually see them as much anymore, but one of them is Frost Iron, which is Tony Loki, which is the second biggest pairing for him after him and Steve.
Yes. And that'd be some good Frost Iron.
Good. I've never read it on purpose. So
there's some really good ones out there.
You're not a person who's into villain
I don't like I don't like Loki. I never got the Tom Hiddleston bug. You know, he's interesting. He's an interesting villain. I find his dynamic with Thor very interesting. I find the stuff that's going on in Asgard, like, I find him an interesting character. I just didn't really ship him with any of the Avengers. Just never really sold me, and I don't really dig Tom Hiddleston, so.
Di, why don't you explain then to Chris and to anybody who's listening who's like, Tony and Loki, I don't get that. Explain where the Frost Iron came from, because I love Frost Iron too. That was one of the first things I started reading in the fandom. But Di, explain the dynamic of why people were drawn to that.
Well, for me, why I got drawn for it was when in the Avengers movie, their whole showdown between Tony and Loki in Stark Tower. Just sassiness between the two of them. And I really like villains in movies. They're like one of my, always end up being some of my favorite characters. And I like sometimes reading good guy gone bad kind of fan fictions. So when they don't take quite the right side, things go kind of gray or lines blur and stuff. So that happens with some good Tony and Loki fix.
There's a lot of really good dark Tony.
I do like Dark Tony and Loki. There's not enough out there. Write more Dark Tony writers out there.
I think it kind of comes down to the fact that Loki is so manipulative and Tony is so smart. But throughout his movies, he's also so prone to manipulation. Like to good manipulation, right? Because that's with Stane. He had this relationship where Stane fake gave him everything he wanted emotionally. And Stane manipulated him. So I think people looked at that relationship and they see that he throws Tony through a window and kind of punctures, like, because Tony comes into that scene super like, I'm going to win. Like, of course, I'm going to win. Very confident. And Loki also is likewise has that confidence and has that idea of he's putting on airs a lot of the time about who he really is. And I think the fact that Loki was so quickly kind of able to like just chuck him out a window, just see right through him and chuck him out a window. I think people were into that.
I think also Tony's genius plays into it as well, how he's really smart and he creates things. Like, he creates his robots. He creates Jarvis. Is like a different technology, a new thing for Loki to kind of like grab onto and to like intrigue him.
I think that also there's a particular characterization of Loki that fans of him like, which is that part of his problems with Thor is that he was always the maligned younger brother who was too smart for his own good. right?
Yeah.
So there's this idea that intellectually, Asgard doesn't challenge him. He's not a fighter. He constantly calls Thor dumb. He resents this idea that people call him a trickster. So if he wins a fight via being really smart about it instead of just hitting the thing on the head, people look at him and they think, oh, that's tricky of you, and that's kind of not a fair fight. Versus Tony's entire approach to life is being a trickster too. It's getting out of scenarios without having to punch the guy, but using his brains. And I think he has an appreciation for people who are equally smart, which you see with Bruce, right? So I think for fans who don't like the idea of Tony and Steve because they don't necessarily see Steve as being intellectually challenging to Tony, that's where Tony Loki comes into play, because I think people think he's as smart as Tony. He could outsmart Tony. And I think that that's why also the third one I want to talk about is Science Bros, which is Tony and Bruce.
I love Science Bros.
Similarly, right? That's about an intellectual kind of a romance, right? That's that brainy him meeting Bruce and immediately being connected to him.
Mm-hmm. He's the only one that like wasn't tiptoeing around him in the helicarrier.
And I still poking him. I do still see a lot more friendship fic for Science Bros than I do actual shipping.
I do appreciate the more friendship side of it, more platonic Science Bros versus the romantic side. There's a couple Tony pairings where I just appreciate them more as friendships than I do in a relationship form. And for me, it's Science Bros and him and Rhodey.
Well, because I think the Bruce thing is, it's not a sexual chemistry and heat. It is an intellectual romance.
Uh-huh.
It is like on a very brainy level that he appreciates and loves Bruce, right?
With the Tony Bruce stuff, one of my favorite elements are fics wherein we know that Bruce Banner has a problem with the sexuality side because the Hulk doesn't play nicely with that sort of thing. And so one of my favorite elements of the Tony Bruce fics where they do eventually become romantic or sexual is that Tony is able to, through technology, help Bruce to that point.
Yes, I do enjoy those very much. And I like this idea that fans have too, that because he's like zapping Bruce on the helicarrier, his intellectual curiosity about the Hulk outweighs any good sense or fear. And that again goes into Tony being super reckless with his own life and the way he approached building the Iron Man suit. He'll fly that suit before it's ready to fly, right? I think that's what people appreciate about him and Bruce too, is that everyone else is tiptoeing around Bruce, terrified to let him out. And Tony just has that curiosity. Tony's attitude is, even if it is terrifying and even if I end up dead, let him out, man. I want to see. How does that work? Like, he just sees Bruce as a problem to solve, which Bruce sees Bruce as a problem to solve.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Together they could work on the problem of Bruce. So let's talk about other characters who are part of Iron Man fandom, who we've already touched on, but they get fic written about them in and of themselves, right? But they are technically Iron Man characters. And people who are an MCU fandom but not Iron Man fans may not know as much about them. So we have Pepper Potts. Omitting her relationship to Tony, give me a little characterization of Pepper Potts.
She's very, very smart and very, very competent, knows exactly who she is, knows exactly where she's going. She was a secretary and then a CEO. She has to balance sometimes, taking that role, her role as CEO, extremely seriously, even when her technically boss or whatever the heck Tony is at that point, bankroller, even when he's messing around, she has to balance what she would like to do personally with the fact that she's taken on this role and she's Pepper Potts. She's going to do it well. If she's going to do it, man, she's going to be on top of that and get it handled. Very, very competent, very, very self-possessed. This is why we never see her in a really submissive role. Even when she was his assistant, she's not very submissive.
Pepper is a really great character, and I'm sad there's not more fic about her that's not in relation to Tony, right? Because that's the movies too. That's kind of her role. You mentioned him earlier, so we haven't touched on him as much yet, but he's also going to be in Civil War. So let's talk a little bit about War Machine, about James Rhodes.
Rhodey is Tony's friend. He's the military liaison working with the military and Tony in conjunction, and he operates War Machine, which is another suit of armor that he took from Tony when he was being really drunk at one of his parties. They have a really good friendship, and I haven't read a lot of Rhodey and Tony fics, per se. I read a lot of them as friendship fics, and he's, like, always there. Rhodey's, like, the one guy he calls when he needs someone, and his backup kind of thing, and he's, like, go-to guy.
Yeah, Rhodey is, there's not as much fic about him, I feel like, as by all rights there should be, right? Because there's a lot of Sam Wilson fic, and he's kind of the equivalent of, like, he's Cap's Rhodey, almost. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. He's, like, the good bro, the go-to guy.
Yeah, he's the good bro who has a military background, who kind of just shows up to be dependable, right?
Yeah.
Who's just excited to be hanging out with a superhero, which is kind of, that's what Rhodey's like, too.
Yeah, all Rhodey.
We'll see if they do more with War Machine in the MCU, though. Do you think if they did a War Machine solo movie that people would actually be interested in that?
I think it'll depend on what he's doing in this film.
Oh, the feels.
And what happens to him in this film. I think that a lot of his roles in the previous Avengers movies have been really kind of him on his own. Doing his own thing, off, you know, guarding the, saving the president, you know, and sometimes he's on Tony's side and sometimes he's absolutely not, but he's been separate from a lot of that, separate from a lot of the superheroing, and then he was the government's dog, kind of, for a while there, where he absolutely was following their orders. So, there's a lot of potential there, but we really haven't seen him, I don't think, play nicely with the other children and seen him in other contexts other than Rhodey, the military guy. So I'll be interested to see what they do and if they do anything interesting character-wise with him in this film. If he makes it.
I can't handle it.
I know, right?
I don't know what's going to happen. It looked pretty bad. I know. I cried for days.
And you feel like somebody's got to die in this movie, right?
Oh my god, Tony would be so crushed.
He would be so crushed.
Oh my god. I cried so much watching the Civil War trailers. Oh god.
I do want to move on and talk a little bit about the bots. Jarvis and Dummy.
And you and Butterfingers.
The bots are something that Iron Man fandom understands and loves. But like, the casual Iron Man fan probably doesn't notice that the bots besides Jarvis have names. But they do. It's thrown in there, I think, almost for fandom. So if you've watched the Iron Man movies and you're thinking, oh, what are you talking about? He has Jarvis, but, like, bots, what? So he has three bots who you see with him in Iron Man 1. And Dummy is D-U-M-E. He is the little robot who gives Tony a really hard time about using the fire extinguisher.
On his little robot that could.
So his other robots, the reason people don't notice that they're characters is that they only are claws. Like, they don't have voices. But the movies still give them a lot of personality, because in the first movie, Dummy is not only putting the fire extinguisher on him an awful lot, but at one point in Iron Man 3, he makes Dummy wear a dunce cap. And Tony talks to his robots like they are his friends, like people. And they will hang their head and show little bits of robot-y emotion. In Iron Man 1, Dummy saves Tony. So it's not Jarvis who comes to Tony's rescue. No. When he can't reach a spare arc reactor he needs because he's dying, it's Dummy who knocks it down to him, and then Tony kind of says, good boy, right?
Yeah.
So they're basically like pets. And then you have Jarvis who, you know, he has in Age of Ultron the bumper sticker that says, Jarvis is my co-pilot. We all know that Jarvis eventually kind of becomes the Vision.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of fan fiction about Tony and his bots.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of fan fiction about just about Jarvis as a character, this sentient AI. And there's a lot of sexual fan fiction about Jarvis.
I haven't touched those ones.
You know what? I have, because I adore them. Thank you, people in fan fiction, for having a dirty, twisted mind for all of the Tony slash Jarvis fics, where Jarvis takes over the suit, or where Jarvis, Tony makes him have some kind of tentacle. Like, there's just fics like that that are really interesting.
That's funny.
Yeah. Well, you gotta think. You know, Tony is that smart and has that much free time and is so interested in the more hedonistic side of things.
Oh, yeah.
He absolutely, if he saw the opportunity, he took it.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. He's having Jarvis Lynn his vibrators and stuff, right? Like, that's the idea in fandom.
Oh, yeah.
I like that his bots and some of them, like, they're his family. Like, he made them, and, like, they're not gonna, like, turn their back on him or, you know, manipulate him. They'll always be there. They're his bots, right? Mm-hmm. And that just makes me really happy.
Yeah, it's super sweet because he doesn't seem to care about a lot of people, but because of the fact that his bots are dependable and reliable and he feels like he's their dad, like, he made them, they embody aspects of his personality. I kind of love that about them. And fans have a real affection. I mean, in Iron Man 3, when they showed his entire mansion, right, get completely trashed and destroyed by helicopter fire, just it exploded. Fans were really upset. They made a point, as the creators of the movie, at the end, to show him standing in the wreckage with the salvaged parts of his little robots.
Yep. I was going to point that out, man. Freaking love that.
The fact that they felt the need to do that tells you that they love the robots, like, as much as fans love the robots. Because, again, it's not something I think the casual moviegoer would even really have noticed, to see the little dunce cap and the little piece of dummy and be like, oh my god, he saved spots. So it's interesting to me that they are full-fledged characters. So let's talk and move up towards where we are now. I am three, you see him have a little bit of a character evolution. I think the end of Avengers leaves him in a very different place than the other Iron Man movies because he's realized that there's a different scope to the problem.
Yeah.
So for two movies, he's Iron Man, and his main goals are just world peace on Earth, like fix Earth. Yeah. And mostly just kill Middle Eastern terrorists, right? Like, he's dealing with the same kinds of problems he was as a weapons manufacturer, just from another angle.
Yeah.
And I think when he sees that portal in Avengers, it changes everything for Tony because the scope of it, like, he's having anxiety attacks throughout the whole of Iron Man 3. And eventually he gives up being Iron Man at the end of Iron Man 3 because he realizes that he can't keep taking that burden on, right?
Yeah.
So that's where he is at the end of Iron Man 3. Now, in Age of Ultron, you see that he has again started building suits. Again, primarily because you get a sense that he tried to quit and say it wasn't his problem. And then Captain America Winter Soldier happened and he couldn't rely on S.H.I.E.L.D. to fill in for him as Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And so he had to step back up again and it became his problem again, right? Mm-hmm. But he spends all of Age of Ultron trying to find ways to not make it his problem again.
Yeah.
Like, his goals in Age of Ultron, and I think where they don't line up with Steve, to me, are that when he invents Ultron because he wants an out. He wants an endpoint. He doesn't want to have to be Iron Man for the rest of his life. He has a head count in his head of, okay, in Afghanistan, I learned that I killed this many people. So if I save this many people, I can stop. I can go back to having fun. Right?
His legend,
I can go back to Pepper.
Yeah.
I think he sees an end game. And I think Steve is offended that he sees an end game, right? Because for Steve, it's his life. He has no life in the 21st century. He has no end game. If you take away him being Captain America and having a reason to keep fighting, what does he have?
Exactly.
Right?
Well, and now he has Bucky. So then that's why he comes up on the other side, is he can let it go for Bucky.
Right. So I think Age of Ultron is actually a really interesting journey for Tony, even though he doesn't get as much in it to do as some other movies, because it is about him chasing that. It is about him wanting everybody to be safe and secure, but really resenting and hating the fact that that's all on him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That so many people are relying on him and that it comes down to him. And that's, I think, what's driving him to create Ultron. And again, going into Civil War, I think, again, seeing Tony ally with S.H.I.E.L.D., even knowing that S.H.I.E.L.D. was Hydra, and seeing how Tony has responded to the idea that there might not be an endgame is going to be really interesting in Civil War.
Totally.
Let's talk a little bit about how things are going to progress in Civil War and this idea that Tony's a villain.
Yes.
Die. Do you think that Tony is a villain? Do you think he's going to go that far in Civil War?
So the thing I think is, people, like, you can have an antagonist, but they don't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean they're a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you look at Captain America with Winter Soldier, you see Bucky. Bucky's, like, is the antagonist, essentially, like the Winter Soldier. He's the antagonist in the movie, but he's not necessarily the villain. And I find that people are just assuming, because it's a Captain America movie, technically, even though almost every Avengers in it, that Captain America is going to be the good guy, and Tony's the only one that we see actively opposing him. So he must be the villain. But that doesn't necessarily make him like a villain. That's just because they're opposing sides doesn't mean he's a bad guy. They just have different views and different opinions on the matter. So I definitely don't think he's going to be a villain. I just think they just have different opinions.
Okay. Yeah. And what do you think about that, Chris?
Absolutely. And I think that that's something that in interviews and things, the Russo brothers have talked about very explicitly. That's what they're going for. They want you to be able to invest in both sides. Nice. The interesting part, I think, in why Tony's doing it is why now and why this group. You totally understand why Tony wants accountability. Tony is responsible for every mistake that has ever, every bad thing that has ever happened. Like, Tony's been 100% responsible for every one of his mistakes. And he's caused all manner of havoc. And it's entirely down to himself and his inability to be absolutely in control of what he's doing or think about the consequences or rein himself in. Like, 100%.
But I think he also owns that.
Absolutely.
In a very public way.
Absolutely.
That he can't escape that. There's no hiding. There's transparency with the public that he owns those things.
Absolutely. So the question is, he also doesn't trust the government, and we've seen that before. So why this group and why now? I think it'll be interesting to find out if there's another layer to that, if there's a particular reason. Something he knows that we don't, but then I think the other part of that is that Tony's looking at the big picture in a way that Steve is not. Steve is concerned with, you know, governmental oversight and da-da-da and the ways that that can go wrong, especially after he's seen everything that happened with Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D., and Steve is concerned with Bucky, and everybody wants to hunt down Bucky. But I think Tony
is concerned with individual responsibility in a way where Tony is looking at overall accountability.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So to Steve, he has this attitude of bad people are going to be bad people. I can't stop them from being bad people. Uh-huh. I can only be a good person and serve as an example for other good people. Versus with Tony, Tony thinks you have to stop the bad people and you have to control the bad people. Mm-hmm. And it's not enough just to set an example.
Uh-huh.
You have to have that level of control, because he doesn't trust people to innately be good the way that Steve does.
Because Tony himself is a good person, but does not always do good, and he recognizes that. And so thinks there need to be other people involved in that conversation now, rather than just him.
And I think, especially with Age of Ultron and what happened with Ultron and everything, he really wants to be able to fix that, essentially, with making sure that there is that backup, that accountability, just in case things get out of hand.
I think he still wants to do what Ultron was designed to do. He still wants a safety network, right? He just went about Ultron the wrong way. But I don't think he fundamentally believes that Ultron was the wrong thing to do. I think he thinks that the world does need that.
Yeah.
It just blew up in his face the first time. Which, if you look at the way he builds his suits and the trial and error he does with everything, I think he's writing Ultron off as one failed experiment towards something greater.
Yeah.
As opposed to learning the lesson from Ultron.
Well, yeah, as evidenced by him turning right around and doing the thing with Vision. And in the audience, you're going, did we not just have this, like, literally 5 minutes ago, have this conversation?
Yeah, but that's very Tony, right? Is for him, as an engineer, you try something, it explodes, you fix it, you change one thing, you try it again, it explodes, and that's just his process. That's literally his process that eventually enables him to have the great things that his mind has come up with. Right? So I think he just sees this as another thing just like that.
Yeah. And I think with the trailers, there's only so much we can see in the trailers as well.
Absolutely.
Like, there must be something underlying or some other thing that we don't know yet, that we won't know until we go see the movie and we're crying or whatever that we're doing while we're watching it.
Because
then it won't be falling. That will further just show what the main objective is and, like, where they both stand and, what cements it.
Well, and I think one of his motivators is that he's very aware of the galactic scale of their conflict, and he wants them to be as strong as they can be, because he knows there are things out there, intimately, he knows there are things out there that are absolutely coming for us, and we don't have time to be fighting with government agencies. We need to be together, strong, on top of this thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they take that. So let's do some quick fic recs. So, Di, what's your fic rec for this episode?
My fic rec is Avengers Shorts by Ariana Peterson 19. I'll send you the spelling of it all after. Okay. And it's essentially a bunch of, some of them are one shots, some of them go up to 5-10 chapters long, and they're all Tony-centered fics. And they're just explore a variety of pairings, a variety of tropes and scenarios, and I've read every single one of them, and every time I see them come up to my alerts that a new story's been added or one of them has been updated, I'm always so excited to read them. Mm-hmm. It's just a really nice variety, all in one kind of collection. I think she's written over 30 different ones. Many of them are still ongoing, and they're just really well written, and yeah, I really like them.
Chris, what's your fic rec for this episode?
The series is called In Which Tony Stark Builds Himself Some Friends. The first one in the series is Something Shouldn't Be a Chore by Sci-Fi Girl 47. And they are, it's a very long series, exploring lots and lots of different elements of a post-Avengers world and missions they go on and all kinds of things. I actually found them first because one of the side ships is Clint Barton, Phil Coulson, which is my secret love. But it's also Steve Tony. And it's just a long, sprawling, lots and lots of them. A lot of them are audio-ficked as well. I've forgotten who's done that, but a bunch of them are up on the AudioFic archive. So if you like AudioFic, that's a good place to start. But it, you know, encompasses a lot of the characters in the MCU and in the Tony part of it by itself. And I have enjoyed them. I haven't read them all, but I've read many and I enjoy them.
Can I just say, Chris, you've kind of stolen my thunder, because I was trying to pick between two fic recs, and one of them was Sci-Fi Girl 47's Tales of the Bots series. Because the act of the creation will be your salvation, which is the one about him building Dummy, made me cry like a baby. So anything by Sci-Fi Girl 47.
Yeah, basically they should just go read everything she's done.
Yes.
So
so my actual fic rec then that I will go with, this is nice, this will be a good contrast then, is one of the first fics I read that made me really love MCU fanfiction. It's called Chitauri Apocalypse by Del Ryan. And it is a fic that is a canon divergence for if Iron Man never fell back through the portal at the end of Avengers.
Nice.
So instead, what happens is that the Chitauri take him hostage, and they take him apart in a really horrific and wumpy and tortury way, and they put him back together and make him build an army to attack Earth again.
Fabulous.
So it's about his journey with the Chitauri, and it's got a lot of body horror and torture and brainwashing and horrendousness. And it's then followed by a huge section where a kind of a Pac Rim thing happens, where it's him bringing these giant mechas he created to Earth to destroy it, completely wrecked, and the Avengers have to somehow find a way to get through to him. When I say he brings mechas to Earth and completely wrecks things, I mean major character death, where he is responsible. I mean the kind of post-apocalyptic landscape being created by him that is just seriously horrific and you would normally see in like The Walking Dead or something. So be prepared for that if you're going to read it. It's super duper difficult, but it's beautifully in character for Tony. So if you are the kind of person who's listening to this and you are absolutely convinced he's a villain, read Chitauri Apocalypse, because it's a fic where yes, he is a villain. But it still gives him layers. It's still about the Avengers thinking they can reach him. It's still about there innately being something good inside of him. And it's just beautiful. It was written for a big bang, so it's 96,000 words in 30 chapters, and it's complete, and it is a work of art, really.
Absolute. Fabulous.
So, quick final thoughts, Di. Oh. Just give me a little bit of a final thought here on why everybody should read fic about Tony Stark. What makes him so great?
He's just, okay, how am I going to try and put this, like, thoughts to words? There's so many, like, reasons going through my head, and I'm like, just because he's Tony. But, essentially, he just has such an interesting background you can play with. So much to build off of. He's been through a lot of things. he's got a lot of stuff to work through. So you can, it's really nice to read a fan fiction where you see somebody who's got PTSD and struggling with all these things and working through them eventually to be better or to get to some sort of end goal or whatever. It's really nice to see good things eventually happen to Tony, because sometimes that doesn't always happen.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what about you? Just some final thoughts on why he's someone worth reading and writing about.
So he's been the longest running character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There's so much canon to choose from. He's been characterized so many different ways. You can find a characterization of him that you like from one movie or another. He works great as a main character working through his issues. He works great as a side character enabling all kinds of things to happen. He's just, there's endless complexity and depth to his character available for you to engage with if you choose to.
Absolutely. I mean, he has some really fantastic shipping stuff written about him where people play with the dynamics. He has some really amazing genfic. I mean, if you like genfic, there's some really unbelievable Stark genfic out there. There's a lot of stuff where he's just really good within the dynamics of the whole Avengers as opposed to on his own. So I think you're onto something. He's just an onion, you know? You peel away the layers.
And you really can't write Avengers fic without including him in it. And I think that says something about him and the kind of character that he is.
And what he brings to the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So that is our show. Thank you so much for listening once again. And don't forget that you can still join us on our DreamWidth, which is otpodcast.dreamwidth.org. The questions we had posed in our last episode about Steve are still there being discussed. You can also let us know whose side you were on in Civil War, where you think MCU fandom is headed, and you can give us your best Tony prompts. And I'm just going to encourage everyone to post a few prompts on Tony or Steve for us, because we have a lot of writers who contribute to the show. I personally am always looking for great prompts, so you never know, if you start to share them, we might pick one to write. So I do apologize, everyone. This episode was a bit late. I hope to make it up to you. I have been asked what my own thoughts on Civil War were after seeing it, so I'm trying right now to compile a little bonus mini-episode with not only my own thoughts on actually seeing Civil War, but some of our contributors as well. So that should hopefully be released sometime over the next few days, and then there will be, of course, another new episode, I believe, next Thursday. So please look forward to that, and again, my apologies. Thanks to everyone for listening, and to Di and Chris for chatting with me about their Tony love. As always, you can find us on Tumblr as OT Podcast and on AO3 as the_OTP. That is, for those of you who are wondering, also where our fic recs are located. And you can also subscribe to our show on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn Radio, or Stitcher, and also maybe Google Play. Thanks again to Peter Jakowski for our theme song and logo, and as always, your kink is not my kink, and that's okay. Or in this case, again, your side in the war is not my side in the war, and that's okay. We kind of don't have to fight about it.